Morning, everybody.
Good morning. Morning,
James.
Morning.
That's true.
You have a comment.
I am Nick Lawrence. I'll be presiding over the Finance and Audit Committee today. Today is June 28th, 2024. Time is 9 a.m. I now call to order the second quarter meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee. This meeting is being held in person at the Surplus Lines Stamping Office of Texas, 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. The Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division of the Texas Department of Insurance, or her delegate, was notified of this committee meeting on June 12th, 2024, in accordance with Section 2C2 of the Surplus Line Stamping Office Plan of Operation. Notice of this meeting was published in the Texas Register on June 21st, 2024, in accordance with the Chapter 551 of the Texas Government Code. All board members were notified of this meeting on June 12th, 2024. All in number was provided to members of the public in the public meeting notice. The committee chair, Jason Cables, and the committee member, Esquil Nithal, are attending this meeting by video. A quorum of two or more committee members is present. I do need to note that Ezekiel is not here. All right. So attending are Executive Director Greg Brandon, Director of Finance Donna Ogg, and General Counsel Stan Strickland. Also, we have Cheyenne Herrera, Shalonda Stone, and Denise Mespita. Are any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance or the Comptroller of Public Accounts present or attending by telephone?
It's John Carter, Director of Company Licensing, representing Jamie Walker, Financial Regulation Division.
Thank you.
Barbara Lazard Hernandez in the General Counsel's Office.
Thank you.
Department of Insurance.
All right. Is a TSLA liaison attending in person or by telephone? All board members, stamping office employees, board liaisons, and state agency representatives should identify themselves when they speak. Please mute your phones or microphones when you are not speaking. Have some procedural announcements before we get to the agenda. We will not have public comments for this meeting. Representatives of state agencies and members of the public are welcome to listen to or record this committee meeting, but please refrain from asking questions of committee members during the meeting or interjecting comments during the committee's discussions. Members of the public or media, please place your phone on mute. State agency personnel may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited at the stamping office functions. This prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of an individual company's operation. Everyone was provided a copy of the March 21st, 2024 Finance and Audit Committee meeting minutes. Are there any revisions or corrections to the meeting minutes? Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the March 21st, 2024 minutes?
Jason Cables will make that motion.
Thank you. For a second. I would. The second is me. I will second that motion. Thank you. Any further discussion? All approved say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Agenda item 3, discussion and appropriate action on 2024 finance year-to-date review. Donna.
Okay. So what we have completed to date prior to this meeting is through May, so that is what I'll be reporting. Our stamping fees were over budget 8%, over $57,500 for May, and over just about 1%, $25,300 year to date. Investment income was over budget 63%, or $65,000 for May, and over budget 39%, or $150,000 for the year, which means we earn more on our investments than we projected. Going on to our expenses, total operating expenses were under budget for May, almost $82,500, or 13%, and under $1.2 million, 27% for the year. And now I'll break that out into categories. Salaries and benefits were under budget 13%, or $51,700 for the month, and 34%, a little over $1 million for the year. We've been 5 heads short on the number of employees that we were budgeted. Plus, we had put in the budget for the pension back in January, which has not been paid out. So that's causing our under budget. Then professional services were under budget 32%, or $11,200 for May. Under budget 17%, almost $38,000 for the year. And in IT, the underage is due to RSI not being engaged since we rolled to the new version of the database, along with MIS ending earlier than expected. So we had a savings there. In operations, we paid 50% of the Lemon Light SOW. That's who makes our training videos. So we paid 50% of that in January, where the budget was evenly spread out through the year. So we had a little, slightly overage for that, but it will even out through the year. Conference and education were under budget 27%, or $2,000 for May, 68%, or just under $31,000 for the year due to the timing of budgeted conferences. Travel and entertainment under budget 81%, or $7,800 for the month, and 42%, or $13,000 for the year. Same reason as conference and education. Occupancy and operating expenses were under budget $4,200, or 9% for the month, and under $43,000, or 17% for the year. And the categories that contributed to that under budget situation were software, computer equipment, and printing, the same as last time I presented. General and administrative expenses were under budget 2,100, or 1% for May, so pretty flat there, and under budget 17,300, or 2% for the year. So we've got that dialed in pretty well as far as our budget. Contingency expense, which we never used, resulted in $3,300 savings for the month of May and a total of $22,000 here. So we had $410,400 income for May and $218,500 income year to date through May. We had budgeted for an income of $123,300 for the month, and we'd budgeted to have a loss of $962,300 through May. Change in investment value was, an increase of approximately just slightly under $82,000 for May, and a $201,000 decrease year to date. Any questions on that one?
No.
On to the fund balance. We went into 24 with a fund balance of almost $32.7 million, which was a little over $20 million over the max that we should have for this year, which is $12,537,946. So May's year-to-date net income of $218,500 resulted in a fund balance on May 31st of just shy of $33 million, which is $20,368,000 over current max. Any questions? That concludes my presentation.
Any discussion or questions for Ms. Ogg regarding the 2024 finance year-to-date review? None. Ogg, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2024 finance year-to-date review?
I do not.
Thank you. Agenda item 4, discussion and appropriate action of pension plan review. At the March 22nd, 2024 board meeting, the board considered and unanimously approved the creation of a pension plan to provide an employee retention incentive while building upon employee expertise. As part of that approval, the board also charged the Finance and Audit Committee with the task of defining the details of the pension plan, including the specific numbers, vesting conditions, additional components, and plan options, and making a recommendation to the full board for its consideration and approval. To that end, Greg will present this agenda item.
All right, thank you, Nick. So before I get started, I want to introduce, we have James Pinder with Nova, and it looks like we have Ernie as well on here. Sorry, I'm searching the screen. I swear I saw his name.
He's over there. Yeah.
He's there.
Okay, yeah, cool. So what's going to happen is I'm going to talk. Hey, Ernie. Yeah, thank you both for being here. I'm going to talk about the process, and we're going to ask James and Ernie and Donna to correct me when I get it wrong. And so the goal here is we really have a couple of things, right? We've got to decide on what the tier levels are going to be. We've got to decide on what the vesting period is going to be. And then we have a couple of other decisions to make. Do we want to fund 2023? I assume we want to fund 2024. And then at what funding level do we want to do that? So maybe as we jump into all of this, the best thing to keep in mind is that last slide that Donna just presented. It's kind of hard to go wrong with any of this. It truly is just making decisions best for the employees and really thinking longer term, right? I mean, generally speaking, when we say long term, most people kind of think one quarter, maybe two quarters out. And truthfully, we're thinking 10 years. So this is truly a difference maker in retirement security for the employees. And so you're really thinking much further out into the distance than what any normal business decision would be. So moving on from that, we'll talk about just give you a general overview. The pension cost of $750,000 was included in the 2024 budget. So probably the best way to look at that is we've been talking about this for the better part of a year. So we started budgeting August of last year. So none of this is news to anybody, but it's unfortunate. It's new to Nick because this is his second meeting.
Actually not new to me at all.
Oh yeah, I don't doubt that at all. Yeah, your experience is actually going to be extremely helpful for all of us, so I really appreciate it. So the pension proposal was reviewed in December and March, and then approval was received in March. And then, as Nick mentioned, the board deferred all the refinement and final proposal to the F&A committee, this committee. And then at the meeting after this, the F&A committee will present to the board basically what was decided by this committee, and the board will approve that to move forward. Next slide for me. So, original proposal, like I said, for budgeting purposes, we created a plan with a couple of assumptions. Let's follow the bullet list. We want to emphasize employee retention. And that comes from me being here 4 years and not too many people employed here for longer than that. We do have some, which we'll get to in the next slide. But really, our historical attrition rate has been substantial. The math doesn't quite work out to this number, but it's close enough. because we don't call people decimal points. But the reality is, when I got here in 2020, we were hiring five in hopes of keeping two for longer than 2 years. And that is something that we have done a really good job of arresting, that level of attrition rate. But we have had a lot of terminations in the 4 years that I've been here even. So, and I characterize a lot compared to what I'm accustomed to from my life in leadership. So, and then we also want to incentivize career development and industry subject matter expertise. And I think in order to develop that, you have to work here a long time to become a subject matter expert and kind of learn all the ins and outs of the insurance industry. The regulatory environment just takes a lot of time. You know, nobody is born with this information in their head. And so it just takes a lot of time to learn it and continue to develop it. And then the supplemental goal is what I spoke to a little bit earlier, is to reward the current employees who have committed their careers to this organization. We have a few, I think it's five or six that have more than 10 years experience. And historically, we were not competitive on salaries. And so what that means is those five or six are behind on when it comes to their ability to contribute to their 401k. And so part of the goal here is to catch them up. And so you can see over on the right, if you've got a tenure of 20 plus years, the contribution rate that we added for this was $55,000. And I know that is a significant amount of money. I absolutely acknowledge that. But I think creating it this way was the best way to not admonish our past salary administration history, but to acknowledge that this is where we are. And we have a few people that have devoted their careers to this organization that deserve, for lack of a better way to say it, to catch up. And this will help them catch up. And that's one of the nice things about this program is we will be able to adjust these programs in the future. And it's hard to really kind of say at this moment, when do we feel like everybody will be caught up? I don't know how to really come up with that off the top of my head, but I know we've got some catching up to do over the next couple of years. So I don't think it's anything that we have to decide this year or next year, what caught up means and looks like. But I will say, I can safely say that those few folks that have been here for a long time do have some catching up to do, and this will help them do that. And then the other thing is, mathematically, we kind of started backwards, and this is where James and Ernie might correct me. So we started at 20 years, and what happens is every tier has to be within 33% of the tier above it or below it. And so really that kind of establishes how far and how low you can go. So mathematically, there are limitations on where we're at, and we're within those numbers regardless of tenure. We're good with the way we've come up with these. But there is some math associated with the tiers that is required either by standard or by code. Honestly, I'm not sure what requires that. Next slide. Okay, so what we have here is the list of the number of employees we have, their tenure. Now, this is a couple of weeks old now, so there's one on there that has switched over to 8 years as of yesterday. And then you can see kind of where the tiers land with the number of folks. So we have a couple of people who are, if you assume a retirement age of 65, we have a couple of folks who are capable of retiring in the next 5 years. We have a couple of more folks who are capable of retiring in 6 to 10, two more in 11 to 15. Four more in that 16 to 20 year window. And then the majority of our employees, you can see, I believe it's 14, are 21 plus years away from retirement. So there's plenty of time to build a system that fits really all of those generations. We've got a few that are my age and a few that are a lot younger. So it's a
Greg, this is Gareth Sprouse. A quick question on the tenure. Is that continuous years with the organization or total years with the organization?
It's total years, non-continuous for two people. We have two people that have ever come back, and that recognizes their entire tenure. Yeah. But most everybody on there, it is continuous. And you can see this is not for anyone's edification other than just to understand what we're talking about as far as attrition and retention. The median number of years is 4.4 and the average number of years is 6.6. Honestly, I don't perceive that as great when it comes to the role that we play for this state. I would hope that the pension will be the final cornerstone or building block in us creating an environment and a culture that really amplifies those numbers way up so that we have a much better ability to attract and retain. So as I mentioned, over on the right-hand side, the tiers are limited to an accrual rule of 133% between each tier. Oh, the other thing is we talked earlier in one of the, I don't remember if it was December or March, but we talked about having a vesting period as long as 5 years. And the, as you can see, the Code of Federal Regulations prevents us from doing that. We can't go longer than 3 years. Now, it would be up to the Finance and Audit Committee to decide if you wanted anything other than 3 years, but we can't go beyond the 3-year window due to federal regulations.
And that's 3 years of employment, not 3 years once the program is established. Is that correct?
Or, well, I think it can be either, but I think our intention is three years of employment.
That is correct. You can do either.
Yeah. So that is a choice we have, which, you know, bluntly would not be fair to the two people in the 0 to 5 year column.
Thus the question.
But it is, you do have the option of either 3 years of continuous service with the company or 3 years since the creation of the plan. The other neat thing, the third bullet point, you can see the actuarial assessment is annual and provides a required minimum contribution and a maximum range up to 150% of the minimum. Is it 150% of the minimum or 150% of the recommended? Maybe that'd be that's a question for James and or Ernie.
You're muted,
Ernie. Sorry.
Yeah.
This is Ernie Gagliani with Nova Actuary. And so the maximum deductible in the actuarial valuation, it's a formula that's prescribed by regulations. And just ballpark speaking, you can fund up to 50% more than your liability. So if your liability is, you know, $1 million, you could actually theoretically fund, you know, $500,000 more. It's a formula each year. You compare assets to liabilities and you do the math, and it's, but 150% for this conversation today, I think is fine.
Okay. Thank you, Ernie.
Yeah. And our minimum is?
What? Okay, yes, good question. The minimum is also a prescribed by our regulations, and it's basically, there's two components to it. One component of the annual cost is pretty intuitive. It's, you know, what is the amount of benefits that employers are earning each year? And so I don't know if we're going to get to the illustration or not, but the budget 750. So the plan design was roughly to provide annual benefits of $750,000. So that would be one component of the minimum funding requirement each year. And then the second component compares the assets as of the valuation date to the liabilities on the valuation date. If the plan's underfunded, let's say it's underfunded by $100,000, then that underfunded piece gets amortized over 15 years, and that gets added on to the minimum requirement. Conversely, if the plan was overfunded by $100,000 and the annual cost was $750,000, then that $100,000 overfunding would reduce the $750 down to $650. The assumed market rate of return for this proposed plan would be 4%. And so if the plan assets, you know, were able to earn around 4% per year, I think the board could expect the minimum to stay fairly consistent each year.
What are the funds going to be invested in? This is Nick Lawrence.
That's not a question for.
So yeah, Nick, we handle the compliance portion. There is an advisor that she wasn't able to be here today, but traditionally they're in pretty conservative investments. This isn't an investment play. It's more of like a benefit play, defined benefit. So you're defining the benefit. You don't want to be like putting it in Tesla stock or anything like that, but it's usually a very conservative portfolio.
I have some additional comment. The board will play a very important role in developing the investment policy for the plan. And so your investment advisor would get with you and discuss possible investment policies for the plan. And as James had mentioned, in a cash balance plan like this, where the bogey is only 4%, you could easily steer your advisor to go with something that it's probably might even be able to guarantee close to 4%, so that your investment experience would almost exactly match the plan's investment goals, and therefore remove completely from the equation any volatility in the asset value of the plan. And so that's the good news that in this environment where you can almost get a 4% guaranteed rate of return with even a CD, say. It's a fairly easy bogey to meet today. Would have been easy to meet 4 years ago when interest rates were close to zero, but as of today, 4% is probably a pretty easy target to hit without taking much investment risk at all. Any other questions we might be able to answer? We're not investment advisors, so just sort of giving some general
this is Garrett Sproul,
approaches we've seen.
I can't remember if this is something that we've discussed in previous times when we've discussed the pension, but with the numbers that we'd be funding it with based on tenure, is that amount, like, so the $25,000, is that the amount that whenever an employee leaves that they will receive, or is that is there interest on top of that would go to the employee or as well, or does that interest essentially fund management of the plan?
So each employee would receive 4% on their accumulated benefit. So, you know, year one, you know, let's say the plan was established in 2024 and the employee's benefit in year one is $25,000 as of December 31st, 2024. As of December 31st, 2025, 1 year later, the employee's benefit would be $25,000 times 4% plus an additional $25,000. So each year, the employee's benefit accrued to date.
Goes up by the 4%.
4%, yep, okay. Yep. So it's the beauty of this plan. There's two different types of pension plans. This is the modern version called a cash balance versus the old. You know, there used to be something called a traditional defined benefit. It's still around. Most plan sponsors don't like it because it's very unpredictable. But the beauty of this plan is it is every employee could sit down, and if they work till age 65, they could exactly calculate, like to the penny, what their retirement benefit will be at retirement age. And then, you know, since it's a pension plan, all employees would have a right to receive their payout as a lifetime income or annuity, as opposed to just a, you know, lump sum payout. But that would be an option that, you know, the employees would have.
So Ernie, if somebody retires mid-year, is that 4% prorated?
So normally there's you'll have a right to describe how the interest will or will not work. Standard design it, you know, for most of our clients, which are not employee benefit plans so much like yours, they're more tax motivated. In those plans, interest is only given once a year if the employee makes it through, you know, December 31st. But you could write the plan to give a prorated version if somebody cashes out early. That'll be a choice that the board will have, a specific plan provision.
Part of the design.
Hey, this is Nick Lawrence. Seems like there's a potential for a few people, once this passes, to just bounce. I mean, is there any risk of that? Cash out.
Well, you're only cashing out with 1 year, right? So if you're planning to retire and you're going to cash out with
$1,000,
that's not much.
Doesn't start when you started here.
No, yeah. So currently only funding from.
It's a good question.
You can see based on your tenure. Yeah. So based on your tenure, that's how much you get put in your account for the year. There's no backdating this to the day that you started. Because yes, you're right.
All of a sudden, yeah. It's been here a long time. Yeah. See y'all.
Yeah, Cheyenne and Sholanda left the car running. That's a great question. It's not designed that way. So it'll start day one of.
I think that was a really good question. I think the way it's set up is actually they're encouraged to stay because if they leave, they're missing out on future contributions.
So even for somebody who's at the long end of tenure, they would be getting incentivized to stay for a few more years because the payout each year is so significant.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. So that's the only way to catch up is to stay.
Right. That's a good question. So let's go through these last two bullet points.
So we did mention we have the opportunity to pre-fund, and what that can do is create a funding holiday in the future. So let's say 20 years from now, we are strapped for cash for some reason. Well, that gives us the opportunity to maybe not pay the full 100%. Maybe we can pay, I don't know the number, maybe it's 50%. And so that gives us, and if you consider what Donna just talked about with regards to our reserve balance today, it really opens up the opportunity to create some flexibility in the future for kind of all the unknown financial issues that we might run into 10, 15, 20 years down the road with all of this. So pre-funding can provide some flexibility for us in the future. And then finally, I mentioned this once, but 2023 can be funded up until we submit the Form 990. So but in order to get the actuarial data completed, we really need that decision to be made today. And the nice thing about that is, I guess maybe that would incentivize somebody, you'd be leaving with 2 years worth of contributions instead of one. But I don't anticipate anybody would do that, honestly. So I guess theoretically that is the risk of funding last year as well. But it's not. I don't consider it to be a big risk.
Does it hit your account at the beginning of the year or the end of the year?
Good question.
Well, we can decide that, right? We set it up in the budget as hitting in January. And I believe Donna would prefer to leave it as a January hit to the budget every year.
I would, but so Ernie and James, is that accurate? We can fund for the current year as early as we'd like in that year. So let's say January 3rd.
Yeah. Correct.
Does that mean that the employee is entitled to that amount the moment it's funded? So say we did a vesting condition of 3 years, somebody who 4 days into their third year, it's funded, they could leave and then they'd have the $75,000 plus the
whatever.
Without any proration for.
Correct. Yeah. No proration. Just straight up. They've been there, really been here 2 years and 4 days, and they still would have vested
2 years.
You would have to go through the whole year.
That's the question.
Yeah. I don't know that. Ernie,
you mean their tenure?
3 years and 4 days then.
Yes. 3 years. They have
to. So it'd be funded. So that January fund funds for the past year.
No. So once we're done here, our goal is to Fund 23 and fund the current year 24. So January 4th, 25, we would fund for 25.
So, right. So if we fund for 23 and 24 now, and somebody who has been here longer than 3 years, so they've matched a vesting condition, assuming we do vest for tenure, that if they were to leave today or the day it's funded, sure, they would be entitled to both years worth of with no proration.
Correct.
Even though they're only here for half this year. Correct.
Sure. Okay. Yes. That's my,
I don't know, Ernie or James, is that our decision or?
I do have a comment on the discussion, a couple comments actually. So start with one thing that's maybe a little bit odd about these plans. The amount of benefit owed to the employee has nothing to do with when it's funded or what's funded. The amount of benefit owed to the employee is whatever it says on the paper. So the timing of the funding is not relevant to whether or not employees deserve due money. So the funding is not really relative to like when you fund it. If the employee left and you hadn't funded, you still owe them the money. Mm-hmm. But more importantly to your question, the way most of our clients write their plan is they write it such that you have to work 1,000 hours in order to accrue the benefit for the year. That's the way probably 90-95% of our employees write their plans.
Roughly half a year. There aren't any. There are no hourly employees for this. I know that using that term doesn't mean require that they're hourly employees, but there are no hourly employees within the organization currently.
So in that case, you would do, you know, monthly then. So, yeah. You know, yeah. And so would you? Equivalencies. There are some sort of prorated designs available. It makes administration a little bit more complicated. But if there's a concern about people leaving in, say, July and getting a full year's accrual, a plan can be written to have a prorated benefit, perhaps.
My more concern was if it's January that it hits and you get it for the full year, then that disincentivizes the retention beyond that year.
Yeah. So if you use that 1,000-hour rule, that eliminates that.
Yeah, the 1,000-hour. So if they quit January 4th, let's say 2024, they quit January 4th, they're not going to get it for 2024 on 1,000-hour.
Yeah.
They'll get 20. So if they make if they're here December 31st, 2024, they'll get it.
Sure.
But Ernie, they can add a last day rule, right?
We don't have last day rules in pension plans.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's so 1,000 hours is usually what, Ernie, June, July?
So with equivalencies, if you work, you know, if there's no hourly employees, then you know, under the equivalency method, you get credit for 190 hours per month. So I think if you made it to June, you probably would get credit for 6 months, 1,000 hours. So, D times six. If you made it into June, you would basically earn credit typically for the year.
Good question.
On the vesting, I hear you don't want, you know, vesting wise, you could set the plan up so that, you know, the vesting schedule gives credit for prior service, but maybe if you wanted to make sure everyone lasts at least 1 year, you could set up vesting to give a maximum credit of maybe 2 years so that you would have to work at least 1 year to have 3 years of vesting by the end of the year. If that was some sort of concern, you can tweak it a little bit.
Before. I don't think that's as much of an issue.
Okay. At least a 3 year vesting.
Yeah. We were actually, because there's no, with the goal of it all being retention,
if you want
to have some skin in the game. And if someone has been here 3 years and hasn't bought in by that point, you know, that's another issue.
Yep. So, I guess, yeah, let's just continue with questions. So we have some decisions to make, but well, let's make sure we get everybody's questions answered before we move on to them.
The dollar amounts seem fine to me, like a good tier system.
So the things we need to decide are dollar amount, vesting, any other
2023.
Yeah, so if we're going back and funding. Right.
Okay. And then do you want to fund at 100% or 150% for both of those years, right? So if you're going to fund 23 and 24, do you want to fund them at 100%? Do you want to fund them at 150%?
And refresher, what's the benefit of funding at 150% versus 100%, given like our fund balance is such that it's going to be a long time before we have any struggle funding in a year?
That's correct.
They so create a funding holiday in the future.
Yeah, yeah. That's the, exactly. That's what you get. You're buying flexibility long into the future.
Since we've got.
Yeah, and it reduces our overhead. Yeah.
You're exactly right. Because we have money.
Yeah.
Why not generate that flexibility for all of our successors in the future? While we can't. So I think Donna and I both would say that it's a really good idea to have the ability to fund. Maybe that's a better way to say it. It's a great perk to add an entire year for the employees of this company. So adding 2023 is not something that we anticipated whenever we put all this together. Last year, we didn't even know we could do it until we were told, did you know, you haven't submitted your Form 990 yet, you can actually do last year. So that is a wonderful benefit for all the employees of this company. We didn't anticipate one of this. But in addition to that, it adds flexibility to lead this organization in the distant future, or not only the board, but for the staff. So all of our successors will be thankful that we did that. And all the current employees will be very thankful they did that.
Yeah, I don't really see a downside to funding 2023. If you're gonna do it, might as well do it. Yeah.
This is a one-time opportunity, right? We can't ever do this again. So it's a great benefit for the organization and a wonderful opportunity.
I do have one comment.
Say that again.
May I make one comment with regard to the 150% of funding concept? So the very first plan year, because the plan doesn't have a liability, there's no 50%. Additional funding available in year one, because the way the math works, there's, in year one, there will be no liability amount to add 50% to. So beginning in 2024, that's where the IRS calculation kicks in. So just not to mislead anybody.
So 2023 would be 100% and 2024 would be up to 150%.
Correct. Hey, Ernie, because they're a nonprofit and they're not worried about deductibility, is there really a limit on how much they can fund per year?
Yes, there is a limit. So
I don't want to test any laws.
I was thinking is the 150. To work, The 150% is like based off deductibility.
Okay, so for our board, for the committee members, let's just go with, is it fair to say 2023 fund at 100%, 2024 fund at 150%? Does that give either Ernie or James, I'm really looking at both of you, does that give either of you heartburn to say that formally?
No.
Okay.
And James does make a good point about deductibility. The 150, it's all about a deductibility thing, which is not an issue for you, but getting into that deeper dive question, what does it mean for y'all? It's probably a question for a different day.
Yeah. I don't want to be the test, the litmus test.
Credit unions are the type of organization that normally pushes the limit on pension plan funding. They like to stash money into the pension plan because it generates a greater rate of return on their financial statement. They get a guaranteed 6% return on their investment on their financial statement because of the way the accounting rules work. So They like to stuff money in there. I diverge.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, Jason, do you have any comment or consternation over the tiering, the proposed tiering, and or the 3-year vesting? That's the other thing we've got to formally decide.
I do not have any consternation. My only question regarding the extra 50% is, what is your current rate of return, and is that a good place to sock it away? Just from a, you know, asset protection. But no, I don't have any concerns with things we're talking about today. It makes a lot of sense.
So that's a great question. Would we earn more if we left it in the undesignated reserve fund? Probably. Not a lot. You're talking 4 versus nominally 5.5 to 6?
Yes.
Yeah, we're not.
Not like 4 versus 10 or anything like that.
Right. And I know that can all change tomorrow, right? So yeah. I know
doesn't. It would delay our goal of reducing our surplus. Mm-hmm. If we.
That's fair.
That's
a good point.
I should word it the other way. Mm-hmm. By funding more than 100%, we will be reducing that surplus at a faster rate.
Understood.
That's a good point. Yeah, we're not it's counterintuitive. We're not necessarily looking for earnings on our undesignated reserve balance. That's a good point to make, though. That's a good question, Jason. Okay, so I'll lean on Stan from here. I think we need a resolution with or 4 different resolutions. One of them is approval of the proposed tiering system. The other one is 3-year vesting period.
That is based on tenure, not beginning of the plan.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, that's fair. Based on company tenure. The third one is funding 2023 at 100%. And the fourth one is funding 2024 at 150%.
And then can I make another possible suggestion? I don't know if this would be for here or something just for the full board, but some mechanism that we reevaluate this in detail regularly, because I know one of the benefits of this type of plan was the flexibility to, so I don't know if in 3 years, in 5 years, something where we, that the board looks at it again, sees, is it accomplishing the goals? Are there any changes that need to be made?
So the board resolved to do that annually, actually. Okay. So the FNA is obligated to do that annually.
Okay. It's already taken care of. That was in the last board.
That's right.
Okay. Well, good there.
Do we need to also today decide about that 100-hour, you know, June? Sorry, yes.
So Ernie and James, do you need that formally resolved, the 1,000-hour for any year, or is that embedded in the logic already?
My suggestion would be once the board has signed an engagement to move forward with the plan, that NOVA would draft a plan document, and then we would reconvene and have a meeting to discuss some of the nuanced plan provisions to make sure some of these provisions, like, you know, exactly how the interest credit works, you know, prorated or have to be there on the last day. The pay credits, that there's some nuances to the plan provisions that we'd want to just confirm that everyone agrees with. So there's, you know, some fine tuning that it would behoove you all to sign off on. So you would assign the engagement, we would draft a document, and then we would review the plan provisions together. You all would say, yep, we like that. And then our plan document group would finalize the plan and send it out to y'all
That will delay the ability to fund for 2023, because it looks like there is somewhat of a deadline on that. Is that right?
There's some deadline. Yeah. We would be able to turn around the plan document rather quickly once the decision to move forward happens.
And that wouldn't need to be approved by the FNA committee and or the full board, because if so, we would need to figure out how to make that determination.
This is Stan. As I'm thinking out, one way we could approach. Go ahead,
I'll let you talk, Seth.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the other alternative is just have the thousand hour requirement, the June requirement, where either they work there or get zero. Anyone who works till June would be a credit that year, but anyone who does not work till June would not get a credit for that year.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
One's much more simple than, I think if you overcomplicate it, I think of it, how do you explain it to an employee when they understand it?
Yeah. Simple is good.
Okay. So we're saying through June 30th?
They get 190 hour credit for each month they work when they're salary. So I think that's sometime in June.
Okay. So we're still going with the 1,000 hours.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would say that's the most popular because it's easy, and it also doesn't give that person who leaves January 4th a whole year's worth of money that they didn't get.
This is Stan. What I was thinking of as far as procedurally and working it through in a timely manner through this group as well as board, I mean, it sounds like we've identified the core elements of this plan that needs to be approved and approved by the board for us to then move on to it seems like it's more minutia, not necessarily dealing with the core. So what I would propose is that we firm up our recommendation here, basically these bullet points that you've just listed out, and prove it in one fell swoop with the recommendation to the board of those items, and then the board would consider it and approve it, and then grant the authority to Greg, board chair, then go forth and work with the vendors to
finalize
the more finer details of the plan that don't have that substantial impact.
And frankly, it's going to be a lot easier to set it all up that way.
I think that would be. So I guess for today's purpose, I mean, we've talked about all these elements and you've laid it out, Greg. What I kind of envisioned is you just kind of laying out, here are here's the recommendation in bullet form, the funding and peers, the vesting, 2023, 2024, and whether you 100 and 150% on 2024, lay those out in your recommendations. And then you would just take that and lay it out before the committee.
Yeah, I'm seeing Greg will fill in details, and then I will ask for a motion.
Yeah. I think that'll make it as clear as possible. And then going into the board meeting this afternoon, we should carry that same slate of items and present that to the board. Okay.
So we need a motion for this committee are we approving or recommending to the board?
We're approving a recommendation to the board for consideration and approval.
So yes.
All your questions, you're never going to get this and that.
So approve recommendation. So this is for the committee members to approve recommendation to the board for the tiering system as proposed based on tenure, company tenure, vesting based on company tenure. Funding 2023 at 100% and funding 2024 at 150%. So those four issues, asking this committee for approval of that recommendation.
Greg, do we need to also add in the 3-year vest into that?
Yes, 3-year vesting, you're right.
The decision was not the 3-year vesting. Yeah, the decision is not the 3-year vesting, but the start date of the vesting. So the board is saying date of hire as opposed to plan effective date.
Right.
And for that instance, if we did plan effective date, it would be 01/01/2003. I mean, 2023.
Yeah, if you did plan effective date, then nobody would become vested in the benefit until 7/1 say 2025?
We're doing tenure date. Yeah, we're doing tenure date based on company hire. So date of hire. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're correct. 3-year vesting based on company tenure, date of hire.
Date of hire. Yeah.
So this is getting into the minutiae. If somebody left July 2023, do we have to mail them a check?
No, because the system didn't exist.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
We didn't have this.
Yeah.
For anybody.
But if somebody.
End of 2023.
Wait, you make this retro. You're making this retroactive to 1/1/23.
So if somebody left 1/1/24, they're entitled to the 23.
Any terminations after July 1/23.
So you wouldn't have been entitled so long as they had.
So of all the people that left last year, none of them had 3 years of service with the company.
Okay.
So there's no real risk. There's a theoretical discussion that we can carry on to the next hour.
Didn't. Right?
But no, that's
there's no real money that would leave the
I think she did. She had. Lourdes did.
That. Okay, yeah, you're right. There is one. Was she here 3 years?
I triple check that.
It seems odd to you.
Sick in her head.
Is it possible to make this for current employees?
Yes, we had one. Also, wanted to ask, just to clarify, this is Denise, for part of that is to allow Greg and the chair of the F&A committee to engage with Nova to review the contract, correct? I just want to make sure that it's super clear.
The chair of the F&A committee, the chair of the board.
Of the board, I'm sorry, the chair of the board to review the contract in that engagement, correct? Stan?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was writing. Not only review the contract, this is Stan, but also to execute the contract on behalf of the board. The board would be giving them the authority to finalize the contract.
Correct. I just wanted it because I know I heard it as part of the conversation, but did not hear it finalized in the proposal. And I want to make sure that for the minutes, that's clear.
Okay. So let me run through all of them one more time, just for clarity.
Whoops. Did we get a confirmation that we don't have any obligation to, and since we're funding for 23, we don't have any obligation to a former employee who met all the requirements, but is no longer here?
I think, yes. The way we'd want to write the plan is it's only eligible for employees that were employed as of December 31st, 2023. Does that sound like a good idea? You have to be eligible for this plan. You had to be an employee as of December 31st, 2023. If we write it in that fashion, then that takes care of all the people terminated in 2023 because they wouldn't be eligible.
Sure.
And then, but if anybody left in the, if anybody left in the first half of 2024, they would be in.
But we don't have anyone that met the tenure.
The 3-year, correct.
Okay.
Okay. So one more time.
Hold on, Greg. I'm so sorry. Before you, I'm so sorry to interrupt. This is Denise. I know that there's people already trying to get into the other meeting. I'm just going to step out to get into the other meeting to let them know that we're running a little bit behind so that way they don't feel like we're not. So I'm just going to step out real quick and then join the other meeting. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're asking the Finance and Audit Committee to approve a recommendation to the board for the tiering system as proposed, 3-year vesting based on date of hire, full 100% funding of 2023, 150% funding of 2024, and to authorize the chair of the board and the executive director to engage with Nova review the nuances of plan provisions.
Finalize that contract.
Yeah, and found. Well, we'll have to do that based on our contract policy. So,
okay. Do I hear a motion?
You did.
Jason Cables will make that motion again. Sorry.
Okay, I'll second it. Any further discussion? All approve, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you. That brings us to our last agenda item, which is adjournment. We have no other business on today's agenda. I'll move to adjourn. Is there a motion?
Thank you. We'll second.
Yeah, I'll second. Meeting is adjourned at 9:59 a.m.
Done. Thank you. Hold it.